Real Madrid taking on Juventus, Sociedad taking on United, and of course, big games as well for Barcelona and for Atletico Madrid last night. There's only one man we should really be chatting to, and that's Goal.com's very own Mr. Ben Hayward joining me on the line today. Ben, how are you doing today, mate? It's a pleasure to have you back on WFD.
I'm very good, thanks, Ollie. How about yourself? You're sounding a little croaky there.
Yeah, cheers for that. I wondered if you'd notice or not, mate. It's a rough day today for doing this sort of job, but we'll get through it. We'll get through it.
Excellent.
And I guess it's like last night for Barcelona, you know? Had to just try and get through it after going down and conceding so early. What did you make of Barca's performance in the San Siro last night?
Well, I thought the defence was a little sloppy. Certainly they started off poorly, and Mascherano made that bad mistake, and then Piqué was showing up a little bit in the goal, wasn't he? And they didn't look comfortable at all, I thought, last night. So that's a little bit of a worry. In the end, I think it was probably a fair result, and I think they had one eye on the Clásico, so it's a little bit difficult to really judge the performance. Obviously, you know, Barca and Milan have played each other so many times over these last 2 years that, yeah, a draw is almost to be expected. You know, I mean, they know each other so well. It tends to be kind of slow tempo games. And, yeah, I think probably suited both teams in the end.
Did Barca have maybe one eye on El Clásico at the weekend as well, though? The draw against Osasuna, they aren't looking as comfortable as they have done in previous years, although still with a very solid start to the season.
That's right. I mean, they're still unbeaten, but they would have been expected to win at Osasuna. But that's a difficult fixture. I mean, we've seen Barca slip up at Osasuna before. We've seen Madrid lose at Osasuna. So I don't think it was a bad result. And I mean, taken into context after the 8 wins in a row in La Liga, I don't think it's anything to get too dramatic about. Last night, I thought Messi was, obviously he scored a great goal, but he looked a little bit off the pace. He's coming back. Yeah, it's another draw. But again, you know, most teams would be happy with a draw at San Siro. The big one is the game on Saturday, isn't it?
We will get into El Clásico in just a minute. Just finally on Barca's performance from last night, Neymar was surprisingly poor. He's had a few critical reviews around the place as well from last night. Were you surprised that he didn't take to the big occasion? Because these sorts of young stars, you kind of hope that thrown into a big game like this, that they really rise to the top.
That's right. He was a little disappointing, and he missed a couple of good chances, and he certainly didn't look himself. And you know, one of the things that we seem to be seeing now and again is that when Messi comes back into the team, one or two of the other players sort of go back into their shells, and that's a little bit disappointing. We need to obviously Martino needs to work on this, because I thought when Messi was absent, Neymar was incredibly very, very good, and last night he wasn't very impressive. Alexis was disappointing. Both of them have been pretty good lately, and it's something they need to work on.
I suppose that plays into the hands of people who say that Barca are kind of reliant on Messi. Seeing that and players shying away from taking responsibility, really, when Messi's on the pitch.
I think that there's an element of truth in that. And I mean, certainly they rely upon him, as any team would, you know, rely on a player of Messi's talent. But certainly when he's... perhaps, you know, as we've talked about before, when he's perhaps a little bit off his game, or obviously when he's injured or coming back from an injury, they do need alternatives. And certainly Neymar was signed, as you know, obviously to complement Messi, to give Barcelona something different. But also I feel as a kind of long-term successor to Leo. Obviously, Neymar's only 21. Messi's only 26, but he's not going to go on forever. And I think that was the real thinking behind the signing of Neymar. And it's early days, you know. At 21, you're going to get inconsistent performances from a player. But I do think that Neymar will come good.
You say kind of a successor to Messi, and that Messi can't go on forever. Are we seeing this year that Messi is fallible with the injuries picking up? Would that worry you at all if you were a Barca fan?
Well, I think he needs to look at it. I've you know, you read the contrasting things about Messi. You know, some people are saying that he's one of those players that needs to play all the time, And when he stops, that's when the problems start. That's because of the way his muscle kind of configuration. But I think that actually over the summer, what he really needed was, you know, especially after kind of an injury-plagued season last year, was to take a little bit of time off. And now he traveled all around the world, played in exhibition matches, benefit matches, all that sort of thing. And I think really a rest would have done him good. And then he could have, you know, come back to full training with Barcelona and he would have been fine. You know, it's a guy, Messi's a guy who wants to play all the time. He loves playing, you know, being a friendly, a serious match, a training match, a benefit match, any match. He wants to play all the time. But he's got to realize that he's not 21, 22 anymore. And it's taking his toll a little bit on his body. So I think if he can adjust his habits a little bit, he can go on for a few more years. But I mean, the guy's been playing since a young age, and he has to take care of himself.
You talk about teams that have had good starts to the season. Of course, Barcelona still unbeaten. A side that have got really their first blemish now on the year is Atletico Madrid. They're losing to Espanyol, but really the last month or so, when you take in Champions League performances, when you take in the win against Real Madrid, I mean, this has been about as good as it gets, surely, for Atletico Madrid and their fans.
Well, it's incredible. I mean, yeah, they it was in many ways typical Atletico, wasn't it? They had the chance to go top of La Liga and they couldn't do it. But, you know, still 8 wins out of 9. It's a fantastic start to the season. And as you say, Ollie, I mean, they've gone to some really difficult places and come away with wins. You know, they went to the Bernabeu and got the win there and deserved it. They went to Real Sociedad and won. They went to Sevilla and won. You know, they've won 3 out of 3 in the Champions League and been really, really impressive. So, yeah, I mean, great time to be an Atletico fan right now.
Would you be worried, because they're obviously the big clubs around Europe are starting to circle on their talent once again? You know, obviously they lost Falcao, but Diego Costa and Koke as well are really getting a lot of interest, especially in the English papers at the moment. What's the likelihood of Atletico, should one of these bigger sides maybe come in, being able to keep hold of them?
Well, obviously, I mean, you're right. You know, they've got a lot of very, very good players, and Diego Costa in particular has been absolutely outstanding. Liverpool came in for him, didn't they, in the summer? And it was interesting to see his quotes. He said, "I've worked so hard to find a place at Atletico that there's no way that I'd consider leaving at the moment." You know, obviously, there are bigger clubs than Liverpool these days, or more successful clubs than Liverpool these days. So one of them could potentially come in, but it's interesting what he says. I mean, this is a guy who's been out on loan to countless different teams. You really did have to work hard to find a place at Atletico, and it's now that he's really reaping the benefits, of being able to hold down a place. And you know, he's incredibly suited to Simeone's system. So I think he'll weigh that up, and I think he'll realise that it's probably the best place for him to be right now.
It, almost like the Andros Townsend, if you will, of Atletico Madrid, you know, thriving out on loan and then coming back and putting in the performances.
Well, as a Spurs fan, I'll be happy if Andros Townsend develops into a player as good as Diego Costa. You never know.
let's hope so for England's sake. Maybe not for Tottenham's sake, Ben, but let's hope okay. So for England. Atletico, of course, crosstown rivals. Real Madrid, they play tonight, as do Real Sociedad. Madrid have got this tough game against Juventus, but it's a Juventus side that have found complacency in Serie A, in the domestic league. Champions League, do you think it's going to be a slightly tougher challenge than maybe what some of the Serie A sides have faced against Juve? Because these are two sides that are desperate for European glory.
They are definitely. Well, obviously, when we saw Juventus at the weekend, they didn't have a good result at Fiorentina. And I think, obviously, the Spanish press have kind of seized on that. And, you know, Fiorentina scoring 4 against Juventus, it certainly will give Madrid a big kind of boost ahead of this game. You know, obviously Madrid, as you say, they haven't been at their best this season yet. They're still kind of finding their feet a little bit under Ancelotti. So that will be an interesting game. And you'd back Madrid, I think, to get the result. But it's going to be an interesting one.
There's a player in the Madrid ranks that really has just found form at the right time this season. Angel Di Maria has been superb for the majority of his playing time on the pitch. If Bale's fit and healthy, do you bring him back immediately for either this tie or El Clasico, or do you think about sticking with Di Maria and Ronaldo on those flanks?
I think at the moment you have to, you know, you're totally right. You have to stick with Di Maria because he's been excellent. He's been outstanding. I mean, against Malaga, he was perhaps the pick of the Madrid players. He was the one who made the breakthrough in the end, and he's been excellent this season. Much more consistent, perhaps, than we've seen him in previous seasons. So, yeah, he needs to keep that up as well. Obviously, he's got the added pressure now of Bale pushing him for a place. But I think he's responding to the challenge. And Bale, you know, is perhaps still short of full fitness. He needed a pre-season. He didn't really have one. So at the moment, you've no need to change things. I think you keep Di Maria in the team and you use Bale as a very expensive impact substitute.
I always love spending £86 million on my bench warmers. When you look at Gareth Bale, there was talk, especially in the last week or so, about certain doctors at certain clubs describing him as a potential croc, an injury-bound player. Is there anybody who's continuing to think like this? Is there a few questions being raised about the fitness of Bale, or is this just because he didn't have a good pre-season or any pre-season?
I don't know. I'm not so sure. There's always lots of people with lots of things to say. And, you know, Real Madrid have dismissed a lot of those reports. I think time will tell. But actually, when he came on against Malaga and he won that contentious penalty, I thought he looked quite lively. I mean, he's still lacking. He's still some way short of the full fitness. He's not quite the Gareth Bale that we saw at Tottenham last season and in previous seasons. It does take him some time to work his way back to full fitness when he has these problems. But I do think the issues that we've heard about have been exaggerated. So yeah, we'll see. I think it's been a little bit exaggerated.
Well, and finally, the goalkeeping position continues to throw up rumours at Real Madrid, with Casillas saying that he's going to give it 3 months, and then if there's a chance to leave, he'll take it. Can you imagine Iker Casillas playing in anybody's shirt apart from Real Madrid? So is this a real serious possibility now?
Well, I think it must be a possibility because he's not in the team, and being in the team just for the Champions League is probably not going to be enough for him. I mean, he's such a good goalkeeper. He's been consistently described as the world's best over the last, 10 years or so. And he won't want to be on the bench for too long. I do find it hard to see him leaving in January. He's about to, he and Sara Carbonero are going to have a baby boy that's going to be born around the end of December, perhaps beginning of January. So I don't think it's going to be a time where he's going to think about moving. But if the situation hasn't improved by the summer, then I think he'll look at his options, just like any other player of his calibre would do.
Who's better out of him and Buffon? Obviously, we're expecting to see both of them tonight. Who do you think? Because they've been around for about the same time, haven't they?
They have. I mean, Buffon is actually that much older. I think for several years now, Casillas has had the edge on Buffon. I think perhaps even going back as far as the Euros in 2008. When they came head-to-head and in that quarter-final match. And obviously Spain won it on penalties. And I thought Iker had the edge on Buffon then. Buffon's in kind of the twilight of his career, still a wonderful goalkeeper and has been an absolutely fantastic goalkeeper. But I think there was a point where Casillas overtook Buffon. But it's going to be interesting to see, because obviously being Champions League, Iker's going to be playing tonight again.
Let's hope Iker can pull out a performance. We're running out of time with you, Ben, so we're going to have to side-skirt Sociedad against Manchester United and look to El Clasico coming up this weekend. I mean, the build-up's probably not started as much just yet because we have the Champions League action in midweek, but is there a loss in kind of venom between these two sides in the build-up because there's no Mourinho, Pep Guardiola undertone to this game now?
Well, I think that's right. I think there's definitely an element of that. And, I don't think either coach wants to really start a war with the other one. You know, I think obviously we've got two new coaches, Ancelotti at Madrid and Martino at Barcelona, and they're both kind of pretty diplomatic and respectful guys. I mean, there's been one or two things that have gone back and forth, but it, you know, particularly when Martino spoke about the Bale transfer being expensive and saying, you know, Barca wouldn't spend that kind of money, and that kind of annoyed Ancelotti a little bit. But it didn't really become anything bigger than that. And I think there's healthy respect, and yeah, that's obviously taken a little bit of bite out of the build-up. But obviously, once the two teams get out on the pitch, it's a Clásico, and it's going to be an incredible atmosphere as ever.
What does this new playing style of Barca's, people suggesting that they are moving away slightly from tiki-taka, do you think that does anything to the way Madrid approach the game, does it make it easier, maybe a slightly more direct bit of football from Barca helping to expose Real Madrid after they push forward?
Well, you know, I do think Barcelona are mixing it up a little bit. I think Martino is keen to add a few alternatives to the game, longer passes when possible and when needed. Some of the play is a little bit more direct, but I think it's too early to say that they're moving away from tiki-taka. I mean, I think the basis of their playing style is the same and will remain the same, particularly with the players that they have. In terms of Madrid, obviously we've seen that Ancelotti is trying to move Madrid away a little bit away from this counter-attacking kind of style we saw under Mourinho, in favour of a kind of a more technical game, more possession-based, more passing. And it hasn't quite worked yet. We saw signs of improvement against Malaga. But actually, in a Clásico at Camp Nou, Mourinho's tactics were very, very effective. So I wouldn't be surprised to, you know, if just for this game, for Ancelotti to say, OK, we're going to play a bit of a direct kind of a counter-attacking style, because they know that you know, recent results have showed them that works against Barcelona.
Are we going to see it like Jose Mourinho's first El Clasico in the Camp Nou, the 5-0 loss early on in that season? I mean, have you got a prediction for the score? I know it's early days yet, Ben, but...
I was at that game, actually. It was unbelievable. And Mourinho didn't even come out in the second half. He just stayed on the bench. I mean, it was, and he tried to play a little bit open. I think where his mistake was that was perhaps listening a little bit to the media that said that Madrid have to play attractive football, attacking football. And he went to Barcelona, and they were 1 point ahead or 2 points ahead in La Liga at that stage, and played too much for an open game, and they just paid the price, didn't they? And even when things changed around, you know, Barca were already three up or so, and it was just a disaster for Mourinho and for Madrid. So I think Ancelotti will be wary of that, and I think that he'll be ready, and I don't think we're going to see them play too open, because he knows full well what Barcelona can do.
And we know exactly what Barcelona can do as well. Ben, appreciate you taking the time out. I'm sorry we've taken so much of it today, mate, but we will let you get back off and out to writing your previews for El Clasico for the weekend and enjoying all the hype around the around the big game.
Excellent, Ollie. Thanks very much. Thanks. And good luck with your voice.
Cheers, mate. Thanks very much. Ben Hayward of Goal.com joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things El Clásico. And, of course, Barca, Madrid, Sociedad and Atletico Madrid. Unfortunately, didn't have enough time to cover a bit of Sociedad, but hopefully our next guest will. Of course, we will have El Clásico build-up coming up as well once the Champions League is finished this week. I apologise once again for the almost whispering at points. And hopefully our next guest on the show will be able to help me out and do plenty of the talking. A big thanks to Ben there for just giving us the long answers, which are always great when you've got a voice like this. Joining me now on the line to talk all things Champions League football from last night and from this evening as well is the man that we love to have a good old chinwag with about football, the big bad Brassel, Mr. Andy Brassel, on the line today. Andy, mate, how are you doing? A pleasure to hear your voice once again. I'm sure it's not nice to hear mine, mate.
No, you sound like a soul singer. I like it.
Yeah, maybe it's the time to start making those demos while I can before it wears off and cash in on the husky deep blues voice, man. We do need to get into some Champions League preview and reaction from last night as well. Let's start with the German side, Dortmund. against Arsenal yesterday. It was almost like two classic teams playing classic Champions League football, really. An away side who would have been happy with a point but wanted to take the chances if they came against a home side, Arsenal, that really did look like they wanted to get 3 points at home to ensure they have a good record and leaving them an easier road run on the road for this group.
That's right, Ollie. Well, of course, Arsenal were big in it. Dortmund were big in it as the return to London after the final. But it struck me more as, the return to a Highbury sort of 23 months later after their last Champions League game there. And it was an extraordinary difference. I thought, you know, that they were just a little bit of a pale version of their Bundesliga selves when they came. You know, at that point, they were really inexperienced in the Champions League in the sense that they hadn't been in it in 10 years. So despite the fact they were reigning Bundesliga champions, you know, they were playing okay, but like punished for mistakes. Whereas, you know, you got the sense that they were, you know, a lot more calm, a lot more collected, a lot more of a game plan to adjust to the level this time. And, you know, I don't think you can underestimate it when you figure out how well Arsenal have been playing recently as well. It's a tremendous effort, and as you say, they took the chances very, very well indeed.
Arsenal did give them those chances. Will Dortmund feel a little fortunate to have come away from the Emirates with 3 points last night?
No, because I think when you have a game of such an intense tactical concentration, it's impossible to make no mistakes for 90 minutes. It's just not possible, whatever the team, and you know, just Dortmund took the goals very well. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And both Lewandowski and Mkhitaryan showed their quality in doing that. But I think it's really interesting to see how Arsenal are going to play the second leg now.
We don't need to remind you, Andy, of an incident in the Champions League final involving Lewandowski, but his flailing arms reoccurred again. Should it have been another sending off, possibly, for the Polish striker?
Well, I've only really had one glance of it, so I can't say. It didn't look deliberate, so I would suggest a booking. But as I say, I've only seen it once.
And Arsenal, of course, continuing fine form in the Premier League, Champions League now, it's very difficult for them. Do they have to go to Germany and get a result against Dortmund away from home in the next game?
Yeah, I think they do, because I think a draw at least, because of course Napoli are going to go on and probably beat Marseille at the San Paolo. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The situation that Arsenal really want to avoid, if they possibly can, I'm not really sure if they will be able to, is going to the San Paolo on the final match day needing a result. I think that's really the nightmare scenario that they need to avoid. But you know, they always knew it was going to be a tough group.
The other club from England in action last night was Chelsea. They took on Schalke. It was a very weakened Schalke side, and you didn't realise how weak it was until Chelsea had bagged two past them and Fernando Torres is celebrating both goals. What did you make of Schalke's performance last night?
I didn't think they were that bad, actually, after the early goal. I think for the rest of the first half they were strong, they pushed nicely. But you know, the way that Schalke are, you know, they're always going to be open. They're always going to attack. They can't play containment. They can't play patient. That's not what they do. But you know, they got caught very, very early on the break. There were a very early stage in the game, I thought, for that second goal. We know they're not great at defending set pieces, as proved for the first goal. It was one of those games where we thought, well, Ivanovic and Terry are going to be rubbing their hands in delight, really, in the prospect of this. But I think it was predictable the way it panned out. Like, Schalke can do it for a little bit against the very top teams, but they really struggle to put it together for the whole time. I mean, the only decent team they've beaten this season really is Bayer Leverkusen in Kevin Prince-Boateng's debut. And you know, I think you looked at the Bayern Munich game and when they lost 4-0 in Gelsenkirchen, and you thought, well, they really could have a problem here against Chelsea. And so it proved. Chelsea didn't even need all of the game to walk away with the result.
What did you think of the role and the position that Boateng was played in last night? Obviously, missing Jan-Klaus Huntelaar, and Boateng almost played as that lead role in Schalke's attack. It's not somewhere we've seen him thrive really before, is it, Andy?
No, but ever since he's got there, he has played as a 10, so with Draxler moving out to the left. So it's not really that much of a leap forward. And, you know, he is someone who they expect to animate the team in an attacking sense. He had 4 goals in 7 games before last night, of course, including penalties. But nevertheless, his role is very much an attacking one. And, you know, it's to lift the fans as well, get that fantastic crowd of 61,500 behind them. And, you know, they're a bit stuck for options, really, without Huntelaar. And he's had a spell of bad luck ever since he signed that new contract, really. So you have to feel for Huntelaar, but they're going to have to find a solution because they can't pile it all on Adam Jalai for the next 3 or 4 months. You know, there is a lot of youth in that team as well. And, you know, they're in a situation before where Draxler was kind of pulling them forward and inspiring them. And, you know, it can't be all down to him and boating. They have to find another way.
Just finally, on last night's action, a 10-man Porto lost to Zenit St. Petersburg. You're quite a fan of Porto, Andy. I remember chatting with you at the Emirates Cup about them. I mean, normally do so well at the Dragão, and Zenit, who have underperformed really in Champions League outings over the past few years, a little surprising this result, or was it well-deserved on your belief?
I think Porto were a bit unlucky. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I thought, of course, that they played for 84 minutes plus stoppage time with 10 men after Herrera was sent off. And, you know, by the letter of the law, you could justify it. But I thought the second booking for encroachment particularly was very, very harsh and, you know, completely changed the game. And, you know, Porto, they were the better team in the first half still, but they're understandably tired as it went on. I was impressed by Zenit's patience. I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, they've been overcome by nerves in Champions League situations before. So it was really encouraging for them. Ulk is obviously in phenomenal form at the moment, and he was their most dangerous player in the whole game. I thought Yuri Lodygin was really good in goal, and he's been great this season too. And for them to do without Malafaire is a bit of a leak, but it's, you know, he's come from, you know, mid-table Greek Super League to UEFA Champions League, and he's done a brilliant job. So I think there's things to be positive about for Zenit. You know, obviously Porto could still qualify, but I think whereas it was unfortunate about the sending off, I do think, you know, there's a sense that they don't want to overcook that as an excuse, certainly in the media out here, because I think a lot of people said, you know, that's for little teams really to complain about decisions. For us, you know, we should be able to do better than that. And there's a certain defensive naivety that's really not good enough at Champions League level that they're suffering from this season, and all eyes are on the coach, Paulo Fonseca. There's growing pressure on him.
Let's move away from the past, Andy, and look ahead to the future. There's some cracking games coming up this evening. Arguably, one of the most enthralling ties to have a look at is Shakhtar against Bayer Leverkusen, because this is really going to be a big decider of one of the sides that's going to make their way through, potentially with Manchester United as one of the top two in this group.
Yeah, it really is. And I think it's a big test for Shakhtar and their new players, because, you know, they had a shaky sort of start to this season. You know, they're betting in some new players who, just a couple of weeks ago, Michail Lucescu said, have not been much use to us so far. But, you know, they've really been lacking the guiding hand of some of their more experienced players who've left, and especially I'm thinking of Fernandinho. But really, it's been up to Dario Cierna, Jaroslav Rakitski to come to the fore and sort of guide them. Of course, when Bernard beds in, they'll have one heck of a number 10. I think there's any doubt about that. But, you know, even in the first game against Real Sociedad, they were pretty lucky, even though they won 2-0. They were battered for most of that game. And, you know, it was just their experience, their extra experience that saw them through. And I wonder, really, if that is what will give them the edge over Leverkusen. You know, Leverkusen are an explosive team. But, again, they were second best to Real Sociedad in the last game at the Bayer Arena. So I've not been convinced by them so far. It was a pretty below par performance at Old Trafford. It's one of those groups that, you know, seemed mouth-watering at the start, but, you know, now it's not really got off the ground. It reminds me a bit of that Arsenal, Dortmund, Marseille, Olympiacos group from a couple of years ago. You know, 4 attacking teams in there who are exciting, But the quality's not been great so far. Of course, United have had their own problems too. Yeah. So I'm really hoping for two games between Shakhtar and Leverkusen and between United and Real Sociedad, which are really going to light the group up.
How many similarities do you get with this Leverkusen side from Dortmund? Maybe the quality's not the same running through it, but the fact that they're most likely going to be in the Champions League next year from the way they've started this Bundesliga season, and just the learning curve that they're going through with Champions League football, how does it compare to the one that Dortmund went through over the last few years?
Well, it's an interesting point. I think they're dealing with that curve a little bit better than Dortmund did back then. They've made... Well, less amateurish mistakes they've been punished for so far, because of course they won that game against Real Sociedad despite being second best for a lot of the second half. There's a big question mark over the defence still. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Old Trafford, though, all over the shop. So I think how they'll stand up against Shakhtar's attacking players, and especially players like Luis Adriano and Alex Teixeira, who are well versed in what it takes to do well and to score goals at this level. It'd be interesting to see how they deal with that. I mean, you know, you think they've lost experience to Leverkusen in the summer, and even the experience that brought in Emis Bahic, he's 33, and you know, he was making his debut at Old Trafford in the Champions League. So it is a leap for them. Of course, I think from, if you're talking about them, comparing them with Dortmund from a shape perspective, I think Leverkusen are almost a little bit more Dutch, really. It's a classic 4-3-3, and you know, whichever way they do it, whether they have Kiesling and Sidney Sam and Son on the left, or you know, whether they've been trying to solidify things by bringing in Emre Can, who, talking of learning curses, is making a big step up from Bayern Munich's second team in the fringes of their first to playing in the Champions League. I do think that attacking animation, A, leaves them a bit open, but B, gives them a chance, and certainly gives them a chance of producing some really entertaining football.
And talking of Bayern Munich, Andy, just finally, their fixture against Victoria Pilsen tonight. This is surely Bayern Munich's chance to throw their name in the hat for possibly the goal of the week. We saw Wilshers, we saw Ibrahimovic, we saw Cavani, and we saw Kasami as well. I mean, this should be a walk in the park for Bayern Munich and another strong start for Pep and his side.
It should be. And you think, you know, how they absolutely battered Cisca on the first day, and what they did to Manchester City on the second, you know, it shows really how far ahead they are of everyone else. And, you know, it was really the Cisca performance that fired them this season. It was the first time they really clicked, and you thought, you know, this is Guardiola's side. You know, it was the first time he'd really, I think, put his prints on the side, and you know, that was augmented even more at City Manchester Stadium. So I'll be interested to see the sort of team he picks. I wouldn't be surprised to see Zerdan Shaqiri and a few other players who we don't always see starting get a little go. We know the quality that they've got throughout the squad. But for me, I think there's a platform for the Pilsen players as well. You know, you look at their players, going back to Pilar, going to Wolfsburg, you know, they're always going to be scouted because they're the very best Czech players by mid-level Bundesliga sides. And of course, like Freiburg did a bit of business there this season as well. So I think it's a platform for them to show how they can do to move on, because Pilsen won't be able to keep the very best of those players, apart from Horvath, because he's so old. You know, I think they've got to be looking at these two games as an opportunity, not just to bring pride to their club, because of course, you know, they've done well in Europe before. You know, they drew with Milan, they beat Atletico in the Europa League last season, so they're no mugs, but really for the best of them to get onto the next stage of their careers.
Andy, just finally with Bayern, they've played Lahm in that holding midfield role, but bringing Schweinsteiger back in once he came back from injury, and not maybe having him as that double pivot that we saw last season under Heynckes, but having him there as maybe another slightly more defensive option in the heart of the pitch, is that Pep finding a compromise between the style that he initially brought in at the beginning of the season with Schweinsteiger on his own, and now Lahm on his own but with Schweinsteiger just slightly ahead?
Perhaps, but I think it's a question of fitness as well. You know, he's never had a fully fit squad for all of this season. So a lot of the difficult choices that he would have had to make, you know, if he was, you're talking about getting rid of the double pivot, whether it's Schweinsteiger or Javi Martinez or Schweinsteiger or Thiago Alcantara, you know, whether you switch Javi Martinez to centre-back, none of these have been live choices because not everyone's been fit at the same time. And as they recuperate, I think over the coming weeks, you know, people have speculated Schweinsteiger would be the odd one out, even though he's, you know, very much a club institution and a German football institution. So I'll be interested to see, you know, now they're really hitting their straps, now they're getting a few players back fit, how A, he will make his decisions, B, he'll come to his keep tip is favourite 11, and see how he'll keep all of them happy.
We will see over the next few weeks, and Andy, we will be calling on you once again to give us your thoughts on all things European football and Bayern Munich as we continue throughout the season. But for today, mate, we will let you get back to your very busy schedule, and thank you so much for joining us today, man.
Real pleasure. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Andy Brassel there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking Champions League football with us here on the show. A bit of a preview to tonight's games and, of course, a look back at some of yesterday's games as well. Always a pleasure to have a chat with Andy. A big thanks to Ben Hayward there. And, of course, a big thanks to Andy Brassel.